Hey, it's Tony and Melissa. Thanks so much for listening to our podcast.
Here are some of the best parts from today's show. Hope you'll subscribe, share, and like us.
It's 9:30. Do you know what time it is? It's time for the Coffee Break Chat on WICC.
And right now we have Lieutenant Jim Perez here, as we do every single Monday. Hey, what's going on, Jim? How are you?
Good morning. Good. How are you guys?
Doing just fine. Thank you, Tony.
I'm doing great. Yeah.
Always a busy guy. He's all over the place.
I know, right? We're always busy over here. Jim, we talked very briefly on Friday, and I was hoping to get a little clarity this morning. We had a story last Friday in our newscast talking about some of these tracking apps, the ones where you could see where you're running, the routes you're going. And it's, of course, it's for people, especially if they're training for 5Ks, 10Ks, marathons, whatever you may have it, or you're just an avid runner. But now, those apps are, according to the University of New Haven, which actually makes a lot of sense, they could be a really great thing for criminals, basically to track your daily moves, when to either target your house if you're away, or to find where you are to plan an attack. First of all, how worried should people be if they do have this app?
Well, I got to tell you that, you know, with technology the way it is, it can be very wonderful for us. But with it, there's an equal also parcel of danger that comes with it. And this is no different. You know, unfortunately, we are heading into an area and it's going to progress where technology is going to get more advanced. And location services, and that's what it's called, which is on every smartphone. That's what kind of gives us that freedom or you know, to be able to track our steps. Or, you know, find our favorite shops, you know, and we use them all the time in maps, you know, when you want directions. Every single time you want directions, you turn on maps, your location service has to be on in order to know where you are so that it can get you to where you want to be. So because of that, what ends up happening is there are software devices out there and programs out there where someone can literally follow you. In fact, not only can they follow you, but whether people realize this or not, when you're on the road, you're basically on the technology line of the phone company. And when you switch to either a Starbucks or you come to your house, it automatically switches to Wi-Fi. And there are programs out there that actually will tell you that. So you can tell when someone that you're tracking is traveling, and then when they stop and go into a home, you'll know that automatically, and you'll know exactly where they are through this mapping system. That's what makes it so dangerous. Also, keep in mind that fraudsters out there, as phones get more technologically advanced, and let's just start this way. Let's start from the beginning. 1G, first generation, that's what G stands for. That came our first, in the 80s, our first analog phone. 2G switched it over to the digital. 3G introduced us to text messages, videos, things like that. 4G just made it better, and now 5G is coming out, which is the fifth generation, which means that it's going to be basically like a desktop computer. But here's the danger. Desktop computers and laptop, you shut them off at night, so you're okay, you know. But with phones, they're on all the time. And because they're on all the time, it becomes a danger because of leakage, information that actually can come out of it while people are walking around. And unfortunately, companies today are now thinking of giving employees their own phones. And what they have to understand is the danger is that when you give them these phones, that inside information, that, you know, intellectual information that comes from the company can actually leak out. So they have to come up with good policies. I mean, we're really heading into an area that we're really taking cell phones and turning them into full-fledged computers.
Well, you know, I got nervous about 3 weeks ago, I guess it was, because my headset had a short in it, okay? And I could only hear it on one side. It was very annoying. So I turned to Melissa. I said, where did you get your headphones? Oh, I sent away for them. I did this. I did that. I says, I got to get a new pair. How long was it? 30 seconds later?
Not even a minute later.
I picked up my phone, and right there on the phone is an advertisement for a set of headsets.
And not just headsets. They were radio headsets.
Yeah.
They were the ones we would use because they're not just any ones that you would use. We have to have a certain jack. There's a, you know, they're kind of almost like Bose almost. Yeah. They're that kind of headphone.
Yeah.
It's really Big Brother watching. And I'm going to tell you, Tony, I'll tell you a similar story. I was in Walmart in the auto parts section, and I decided to walk over to the bicycle section for looking just for something for my daughter. And when I looked, I didn't even go to it. I just walked in the area within Walmart. And this is in Stratford. Within Walmart, I walked into that area, and immediately my phone started giving me messages about those battery-powered cars and things like that. So, listen, Big Brother's really out there. The technology's there. If you want to prevent yourself from happening what happened to you and what happened to me, you need to go into your cell phone settings, and you need to turn off locations. But remember, don't just turn off locations, because there's two location settings. There's the regular phone location settings. Then there's the Google services location settings. Every single app that you turn on that you use, and then you just back out of it and shut the, you know, and put the phone on silent or remove the screen, or I mean shut off the screen, what's really happening is those apps are staying awake, and they're literally calculating your moves and letting advertisers and marketers know what you're interested in. And so what they're doing is they're targeting you based on that, but they're using location services for it. The easiest way to stop all the madness is to simply put your phone in airplane mode. The minute you put it in airplane mode, it shuts off everything. It shuts off the GPS in the phone. It shuts off the, you know, any location setting will be shut off.
But then you can't really get messages or phone calls or anything, right? That basically
Yeah, but I'm not talking about forever. I'm talking about, like, if you feel like you're in danger or someone's following you.
Oh, just block it.
Area.
That makes
sense.
Right.
If you want to go to an area where you don't want anyone to know, you can simply shut off your location settings for that period of time, and you will automatically not be trackable.
Let's talk a little bit about what we can do to stop all of this. What are some suggestions that you might have for us?
Here's the thing. You have to become a small target. I always teach that you have to become a small target. How do you do that? By, first of all, being aware of how information is being used against you. Let's take, for example, phishing. So that's a criminal activity that literally tries to steal your information by giving you false messages. It could be from a banking institution, from a government institution. They'll actually come to your smartphone, your tablet, or your computer, or email and tell you that you have something wrong, and they have to act on it. If you receive a message like that, ignore it. Go to the original site, okay, or the original phone number. Call them and see if there's a problem. No federal, state, local, or any private company will ever just initiate conversation with you out of nowhere. They'll always be, you know, if you started the conversation first, that's different. Then there's farming. Farming is where they install malicious codes on your device, whether it's your phone or your laptop. They'll actually put malicious code through a message, and as soon as you click on the message, it actually opens up all your information to them. That includes all your contacts, all your banking information, all your passwords, everything you have there. Then there's phishing, where they use the phone to commit fraud. They use social engineering tricks, really, to kind of get information from you. It's almost the same thing as the phishing. Then you have, really ready for this, mishing, which is where they use text messages to steal your info. So you might receive an anonymous text that'll say click here, and I've gotten those. Let me tell you something. Just delete them. Don't click on them. Don't look at it for longer than you have to. Just get rid of it. I tell people this. If you have not initiated a contact with any company or with any official or anybody else, just ignore it and throw it away. I don't care how enticing the message sounds. I don't care how great the subject line or how attractive the subject line is. Just get rid of it. The last thing you got to worry about is called blue bugging. Blue bugging is where they use your Bluetooth to steal info. So while you're listening to music or you're listening, you know, listen, you have to understand something. When your phone is out on the road, it's usually using Wi-Fi, right? Or when you're in a public building or someplace, you're using Wi-Fi. So when you're sitting at the airport or sitting somewhere kind of just going through your messages, that stuff can leak out. And it's called man in the middle. That's where someone with a device somewhere near you is literally capturing all that information through the air and actually taking over. And that's how they can take over your phone, they can take over your laptops, your computers. So you have to be very careful and when you use public Wi-Fi. I try, honestly, never to use public Wi-Fi. I just don't do it. I just don't do it. I'd rather use my own hotspot or my own phone service rather than using public Wi-Fi, because public Wi-Fi is just there's people everywhere trying to steal information.
Yeah, that makes sense. So if for all the ishings that he just mentioned, because there was about six there, just so everyone knows, that will be up on our podcast, and we'll have all that information for you there. As far as that app is concerned, really quick, Lieutenant, the one where people are running and they use that, because that's a specific health app that many people use for training. Do you suggest still keeping it, or is it something where, honestly, you just go back to the old days and write down on a pen and paper, use a stopwatch, tell yourself how far you went, how long it took, and write down the way that you went? Like, do you go back to old school instead of using these apps?
I prefer, listen, you can easily go out for not a lot of money and get a pedometer and put it on and then use your watch to track. It's the same thing. It's easy. I'm not discouraging. I don't want to discourage people from using technology, because I think technology can be great. I just think that you have to use it cautiously, and you have to use it judiciously and not all the time. So you shouldn't always have it on. So in other words, if you're running with the health app and you're not fearing any danger, go ahead and use it. But after that, shut it down, you know, and shut off the location service. All of these companies like Google, Foursquare, Uber, I don't care who you name, they all depend on location services. So they must know where you are in order for it to work properly, because that's how those programs are designed. So by nature, what I would do is I would shut off all of them. And if you really get paranoid and you really think that someone's after you, simply shut the phone off. And if you can remove the battery, remove the battery, and then it's over. Again, like I said, when companies used to give out laptops for work, you know, we would use them, and every once in a while you get an intellectual property loss because, you know, the laptop's left in the car and it gets broken into and taken. But for the most part, those devices are off. Now, what a lot of companies are doing, and a lot of people, even us personally, is our phones are on all the time because we want to stay connected. But understand that that means that when it's on, you are giving out the potential of giving out information. So one of the things I do suggest you do is, because 91% of laptop and desktop owners have some type of antivirus, but believe it or not, less than 40% of phone users have an antivirus. There are actually protective devices that you can buy programs for it. One of them is called Lookout. And what this does is it creates a firewall in your phone so that no one can just get to it. And if someone tries to breach into it, they'll actually let you know so that you can take matters into your own hands and correct it. So the most important thing you can do is turn off notifications. If you have to have them on because you're catching an Uber or, you know, you're navigating somewhere, then make sure that you have some type of antivirus or a protection on your phone, because, again, over 90% of laptop desktop users have it. Less than 40% of phone users have it, and that's bad.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
They don't think of their personal phone as a computer, but that's exactly what it is. So you have to treat it exactly like you would your computer at home.
Yeah, exactly. I just shut the locations off on my phone, and I'm in the process of doing that for Tony. So thank you so much, Lieutenant Perez. I really appreciate it. And again, we'll have all that information, because you just gave a lot that we would love to share. We'll have it on our podcast for people to access. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Have a great week.
We are joined this morning by State Senator Tony Wong, and he is a regular around here. We always enjoy speaking with him. Tony, how are you today?
I'm wonderful. Good morning to you.
All right. Let's get right to it, because we only have a few minutes. Governor Lamont started talking about taking action in the vaping epidemic. Has he laid out any plan? Have we heard anything, how he plans to go about this? Can you give us any insight into what's going on?
The bills that we passed that will go into effect October 1st is a tobacco 21 legislation, which says that tobacco, e-cigs, and vaping age will be raised from 18 to 21, which will address some of the confusion in our high schools, but also raise some standard of being able to use those products. And one of the reasons is because vaping is a potential health crisis, particularly among our young people. You know, the Center for Disease Control did a survey that between 2017 and 2018, vaping increased by over 78% among high schoolers, and believe it or not, 48% in middle school students. So these are alarming numbers, and it's just a trend that when you vape at an early age and you get addicted to nicotine, you will tend to be smokers for the rest of your life. That is a trend that we are severely hampered by and severely concerned about.
And Tony, I know we're happy that this is going into effect tomorrow. That's one of the big, I think, takeaways for the October 1st, because there's a lot of changes being enacted, I think, starting tomorrow. But I did think that Governor Andrew Cuomo from New York, I thought he made a really good point, though, that even with this in place, right now you have New York, Rhode Island, and Massachusetts all putting bans in place, all really taking very strong action specifically against vaping. But all they have to do, anybody who wants to break the law, all they have to do is really skip over to Connecticut still and be able to use these devices. So even if you're 21, 22 years old, there's still a huge issue with post-college kids and people who are using vaping. That's unfortunately, it's not the same products that are trying to get people off of cigarettes. It's these kind of third market, or I'd say almost like a black market, that they're bad pods that we don't even know what's in them and how they're causing people to get sick. So do we know if we're taking anything a step further when it comes to specifically vaping and how we get rid of the issues we're seeing right now and making people sick?
New York has made a ban that will be effective soon, and Massachusetts had looked at a four-month reevaluation and banning on flavor products. And I know that the governor, Governor Lamont, is not going to legislatively do that, or executive order do that, rather. But I think the regional approach that you mentioned is a good approach. But one of the concerns is most of the incidences of hospitalization and danger has been a result of THC, which is marijuana, cannabis, in using of vaping. So, and that is legal in Massachusetts. It's not legal in New York. So when we talk about the complexity, there are so many variances in regards to how we regulate and how state laws differ across the board. So I think it is appropriate for the governor to not issue a blanket executive order, but for us as legislators to go back in, fully vet the whole process, and really do a bill that is appropriate and proper to the best effort to blunt this epidemic, but also to think out the process and include everybody in the process. So I do applaud the governor in not putting out a blanket executive order, but let us as legislators go back, talk to the experts, get more information. One of the areas I will tell you is a real concern is this. You know, since 2000, we have gained almost $2 billion in the tobacco settlement fund. What's frightening is only about $200 million of that $2 billion has gone into a trust fund for tobacco, a special fund that's used for anti-tobacco efforts to educate and raise awareness. And ultimately, we raided that money. So less than about $80 million of the $2 billion has actually been used for the purpose of tobacco cessation. That is something that we as legislators need to go back and reevaluate and really put those ill-begotten money from the tobacco settlement funds to the proper use of educating, raising awareness, going into our schools, going into our community programs, helping people with tobacco cessation programs. That is where money should be applied. To have over $2 billion since 2000 that was allocated for these kind of programs be raided by our state budget to be put into general funds to feed our insatiable budget, that's something that we have to put a stop to legislatively.
Tony, we have run out of time, but you know, I think the big thing is education. We've got to talk to people and keep trying to educate them about how bad the whole vaping thing really, really is, you know, and how quick it could really happen. You know, you could take a couple of puffs on this thing, you get the wrong cartridge, you could be dead right there on the spot or become very, very sick and you can't reverse it.
But the trend is, you know, like the Joe Camel cigarette commercials, which we banned, the fact that you've got bubble gum and, you know, creme brulee, these flavors that appeal to young people. And also, I think the second part is vaping for a phenomenon has been cool to allow young people, high school and middle schoolers, to be adults. It's something that we has, again, public policy, but also community, parents, educators need to put a forefront to say, this is not acceptable, this is not cool, and it is a danger to your health. And having that money to be able to help with our valued programs. There's so many people out there educating. having some funds to be able to help them do that job is something that we need to put a priority to.
Yeah, we agree with that. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Senator Tony Wong. We have you on every Monday morning now at this time, and we're so glad to have you be able to weigh in on things that are going on in our state capitol. Thank you so much for taking the time this morning.
Absolutely. Pleasure. Thank
All
you
right.
very much.
On the telephone line is certified financial planner Neil Jassani. And Neil, we welcome you to the show. How are you?
Good morning, Tony. Good morning, Melissa. Good to be with you. I'm very good. How are you guys?
We're doing just fine. It's a pleasure to have you here this morning. We're getting closer and closer. Closer to the holidays, a couple of months away. And we wanted to talk to you a little bit about holiday shopping. I mean, first question out of the box, what's the most important thing someone should do when planning their finances for the holiday shopping season?
Sure. So, first of all, I can't believe that we are talking about holidays. Is my summer gone? But anyway, that actually first thing that I would say that you've got to make a list. Second one, assign a dollar figure that how much you want to spend on this person for a gift. And third one, make a total that you want to spend for the everyone. And final one, stick to this, period.
I was going to say, those are all seem like very simple things, Neil, and I think that they get overlooked. I know just going to the grocery store, I have the same problem of not making a list and figuring out what your budget sort of is and what you want to spend each week just on groceries, let alone when you want to go shopping for your loved ones for the holidays. So those are really pretty simple, easy tips, but I've got to imagine people overlook that a lot. They won't put a list together or figure out how much money they do or don't want to spend that year.
Absolutely, because that other, it is not that you don't want to do it. It is more like a psychological that anything becomes difficult, we try to postpone. And spending money, shopping is fun, but doing these things is not fun. So we don't do this, but we do the other stuff. But I'll tell you that whenever you actually cut it short or when you don't stick to the steps, I think that's where the problem starts.
You know, I remember growing up, we get to the holiday season, and my father would call it, can you top this? You know, because every single year, it seemed like it had to get bigger and better, and my wife kind of does this too now with our kids, although she's backed off the last few years, but it used to be, you know, you'd have five or six gifts for the kids. And my wife would look at it and she'd say, oh, well, there's hardly anything here. There's nothing under the tree. There's nothing. I said, what's the big deal? I mean, there are some kids that don't have anything under the tree.
Right.
You know?
Right. I think sometimes that perception gets so skewed, especially this time of year, and the comparison to the rest of the society. And please, Neil, I mean, I'm sure you've seen the whole gamut where people either buy one or two gifts or they buy 20. But I mean, as far as I think a lot of that probably is impulse shopping. I think sometimes people will just start to get on a roll. You see that you have maybe five or six gifts and you think, well, that can't possibly be enough. So you just start to buy and buy, and your plan is out the window. So are there limits? Are there ways to control this? Because I think even if you're a controlled shopper, by the time October, November rolls around, all of a sudden the impulse shopping happens far too often.
So absolutely. So I guess one is that, as I mentioned, that you make a list, assign the dollar figure and to try to stick to that one. Number two is rather than going to the shopping mall or wherever that you can spend money every weekend during the holiday season, find some other activities that you can do. You can go out with friend and play some games or do some other stuff where you don't spend the money. And the third thing, maybe somehow that can actually look at globally that we do everything in this country so much. I mean, if you look at globally, there are so many people who can't even able to do anything. So maybe if we look at it in that way, I think it is going to help us control our urge to spend more money.
We're talking to certified financial planner Neil Jassani. And Tony, you and I were saying this morning, it's hard to believe September just flew by. I hate to even say, oh, Christmas is around the corner. But I mean, let's face it, time flies and it's crazy how quickly it's going to pop up. But I know in our house, there's a lot of us, Neil. So there's seven checks, and then a lot of us are married. So there's about 12 of us in our family alone. And instead of us all buying a gift for every single person, we do something like a Secret Santa in our house where the limit is $50 or $100 or something. And you just buy one nice gift for whoever you pull out of the hat. Now, I know that's more of an office thing, but would you suggest maybe cutting back on having to feel that obligation? I think Christmas time, and I don't know if you feel this way, Tony, but Christmas time, I feel like people always feel obligated to get stuff for people. Mm-hmm. But you don't really need to do that. And if you do have to get stuff for people, maybe you figure out a way that you just get one nice thing and everybody's covered, but you don't have to buy 16 gifts, just one or two nice ones. You know what I'm saying, Neil?
I totally agree with you. And that, Dada, I guess that is what we are doing. I guess more we talk and more people, you know, should ponder on it and think it through. I think otherwise what happened is it is we are so nice people and we think about the other people's emotion and how they're going to feel, and we end up doing some time that might not be the right even for everyone. So absolutely, you are right that this is what we need to do. We need to talk it to, say that's a mom, dad, you know, that uncle, aunt, I still love you and I love you more than you think. But I guess this is what something is the actually right way to do. So I guess it is actually talking a little bit, and the more we talk over the media, I guess it is just going to give everybody some new ideas to how to deal with it.
Or, you know, a lot of holiday shoppers, they do the impulse thing. How do you control this? This is a mental problem. I mean, maybe we should be talking to a psychiatrist after this, right?
That is what Action Business Work did. In the America, we did figure out how to lure the customer, how to have them spend, and how to have them spend more than they can afford, right? So I think that is what it is. So that's where I do believe that one is, you know, if I can give you the example, do you feel like eating the banana or the apple now? No, right? Because that you are not seeing the banana, you are not actually near to banana, and that nobody's eating near to you. So, but if that somebody's eating the nice banana or the apple near to you, you are going to feel like eating too. So it is exactly the same one in shopping, that if you go to the shopping mall, even though you don't want to buy anything, but you are there, you will end up seeing some nice stuff. And when you end up seeing some nice stuff, you will end up buying, even though you can't afford, and you're going to put it on your credit card.
Right. So you avoid places like the mall where you're going to walk around. And if you see, you know, oh, that movie store, I didn't think about it, but maybe I could pick up six or seven movies when you didn't think about that an hour ago. That's what you're kind of insinuating.
Absolutely. So that you find some alternative activity, maybe some sports, maybe some other things. You guys, you know, should get together and play some, you know, cards or some other things. Shopping is not only the fun. That's what it is for the most people I've seen. It is the food, and shopping is the end of the world. It's not. There's a way bigger world out there than that. So I guess that is what something it is, a changing our perspective.
Yeah, I think it is. And I think the same thing with gift giving. I know something my brother taught me years ago is sometimes, especially if you can't afford it, if you're in heavy debt, a great way to give a gift is if you plan a day, if you plan to go out for a picnic or something out in the park, or you plan to do something that's, you know, less expensive. I know my sister and future brother-in-law, who are out of college, but, you know, they're getting started in the work world. He takes her disc golfing because it only costs $7 to rent the stuff, and you're out all day, and he packs a lunch, and, you know, and that to him is a gift to her when they can't afford to go on, you know, extravagant dates and things like that. So maybe kind of changing your thinking when it comes to gift buying. Certified financial planner Neil Jasani, we are so glad you could weigh in on this conversation. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
This is September the 30th. This month just flew right by. It is unbelievable how the months just fly by as you get older. Now, tomorrow it'll be October, and it all begins. I mean, I think most of all, it's the countdown to Halloween, of course, which is on October the 31st. Some folks go all out for the holiday. Some folks don't do anything at all. Are you all set for costumes and things like that as an adult? Do you dress up, or do you leave all of that to the kids? You know, what are your Halloween Traditions. What are your Halloween traditions?
We actually just completed one of our Halloween traditions this past weekend. So for the last 4 years, it was something we wanted to wait till we were adults and we could really appreciate it. But this is now the fourth or fifth year now. My mom, brother, and I always go to Mickey's Not So Scary Halloween Party in Walt Disney World. So we flew down there. We've literally done this for 4 years now, other than last year when I had Chase. We fly down for 48 hours, my mom and I, to go meet up with my brother, and we go to the Magic Kingdom Halloween party. They completely transformed Disney into a complete Halloween town. It is so cool, and we brought Chase down there this weekend. We flew back yesterday morning. Storm and Norman and you, Tony, both looked at me like, are you crazy? But this is something we have done for every Halloween since we turned adults and Matthew started working at Disney. And we make it work every single year. That is just something we've always done in our adult life. Besides that, though, I mean, the typical, we like to get pumpkins and try and carve one or two maybe and leave them out or, you know, things like that. But other than that, I mean, a lot of the Halloween traditions that I did as a kid kind of went by the wayside a little bit as I got older, I would say. But I don't know about you. You were asking this morning, if I wasn't home, would my husband still go out to get pumpkins and things like that? And I don't know if he would. I think I kind of am more of the driving force of let's go get apples and cider and let's go get pumpkins and things like that. I'm not sure if he would do it. Maybe he would. I don't know. What about you?
Yesterday, there's a pumpkin patch. There's a church that sells pumpkins for a few weeks every year. We went there. I went there with my wife. We picked up a few pumpkins, and we get them, and we, you know, arrange them on the front porch and all of that. In answer to your question, no. If my wife ever left me for another man and flew away to Bora Bora or whatever it is, no, I don't think I would do the pumpkin thing, okay? But it makes her happy. She loves it. So, yeah, we go and we do it. We don't carve a pumpkin. We tried that a couple of times. I cut my finger one time and I got aggravated. So
you're like, I'm done with that.
I'm done with this. You know, maybe when the kids get older, if they want to do it, but they have the lazy gene like their father does as well. And I got to be honest with you, at the risk of you giving me a dirty look, on the night of Halloween, we turn off all the lights. We do.
Not going to give you a dirty look. I actually don't even stay in my neighborhood.
Yeah,
I go to my mom's neighborhood. I don't even stay home. I shut the lights off. I keep the dog at the front door.
No, I mean,
I don't want to be bothered. So I go to my mom's house. I go and hang out with them while they get trick-or-treaters, and I just hang out and have dinner at their house. That's what we do.
So that begs the question of the day. What are your Halloween traditions? What are you doing for Halloween? It's almost here, and we'd like to know what you do. Go to our Facebook page and tell us all about it. We read back your answers at around 8:30 this morning. But so, I know people, there are some people that go all out for it, like crazy. Other people, it's too much work.
Do you go? Do you have trick or treaters then that show up to your door? Or do they just bypass you?
I think that, well, they've learned. They've learned. I mean, the first couple of years we shut off the lights and it got all dark and everything, but they still managed to ring the doorbell. And my wife and I are like, shh, go quiet, maybe they'll go away. You know,
maybe they won't know.
Yeah, maybe they won't know. You know, and then as time went on, I think they understood it. That's old man Reno. He's a mean man. So they don't come to the door. Anymore. Yeah. Now, what we do is there's a little boy that lives two houses over from us. For some reason, I don't know why, he loves me. He'll come to me. He'll sit on my lap. He'll watch TV with me the whole night. Hates my wife. My wife gets close to him, and he cries, and he wants to run away, and all of this, you know. So we bought him a little thing with candy in it, with a pumpkin head on it. So I'll give that to him.
It's that concept, like the dogs are. When dogs know you don't like them, they're more attracted to those people because they want to break that silence. Versus if you love them, they're like, okay, don't touch me.
Yeah. But I don't know why. My wife is like a beautiful person, and you know,
she's wonderful.
He doesn't want to go near her. I don't know what the heck it is. So it's funny because he had a toy. He had a Buzz Lightyear in his hand. We were out in the parking lot.
Yeah.
And I was like, JB, can I hold Buzz Lightyear? Yeah, here. He gives it to me, you know.
Yeah,
and I hold it. I say, wow, that's a great toy. I wish I had one of these. And I give it back. My wife, can I hold Buzz Lightyear? Oh, it's hysterical.
No.
It really, really is. So we bought him a little thing of candy, and I guess I'll go over there. My wife can stay, you know, away because she scares him. Yeah, you know. So what are your Halloween traditions? Let us know. Go to our Facebook page, and we'll read back your answers at 8:30 this morning. We're looking forward to it. This is September the 30th. And we're going to head into October starting tomorrow. Yeah, the countdown to October is on, okay? And, of course, October 31st will be Halloween. Some folks go all out. Some folks do nothing at all. What are you going to do? Are you all set for Halloween, or is this something that takes a whole month to really get into? Are you constantly decorating? Are you constantly looking around for the perfect costume? Or do you do what I do, just kind of do nothing and just like let it pass? Is that what you do? All right. I mean, so, you know, I mean, a lot of adults, they don't drop it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't mean that in a bad way. They just keep it going.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a really fun thing, especially if you don't get too, you know, crazy into it. I think it's fun to dress up or to find a reason to celebrate. I think sometimes it's hard to find reasons to just celebrate and have a good time or find. I know for my mom, it's a great excuse for her to have her kids come home. So she tries every other year to have a Halloween party. I think this year she is having her Halloween party, but it's really just a reason for her to have her friends over and have her kids over. And for everybody to just have another time to all be together and just to have fun, kick back, and relax. So I think sometimes that's why people hold on to it. Other times it's because they just love the idea of being a kid again and being able to watch movies or be able to dress up or get excited about the seasons changing. You know, I think it's hard when you live in New England. If you don't love the seasons, well, how do you get through them? And I think holidays and different traditions, I think they help people get through them and enjoy it a little bit more. I think that's why we love New England so much. But I mean, hey, who am I? I don't know.
All right. Well, so what are you doing for the holiday, for the Halloween holiday? All right. Tracy says, Halloween movie every weeknight. I love Hocus Pocus, the Halloween Towns, Twitches, the Disney Halloween movies are my favorites.
Tracy, yes, I agree with you. Hocus Pocus is by far amazing, but the Halloween Towns, those are very good as well. Jess says she goes to Sesame Street Place, Halloween. I guess they have a Halloween-themed Sesame Street Place, which is cool. She has a young daughter, I know. Pumpkin picking, they go trick or trunks. Which, have you ever done that before, Tony? It's like when people all park in the parking lots, they open the back of their trunks of their cars and they have treats in the back. So the kids are monitored instead of going throughout the neighborhood. They just go to like the school parking lot and go trick-or-treating.
Nice.
It's pretty cool.
All right.
Yeah, they seem to love Halloween over there. That's what she says.
All right. Linda is a woman after my own heart.
I told her this.
Linda, you are beautiful. She turns off the lights and pretends it's not happening. God bless you, Linda. God bless you.
And I just had to add in this one from Nicholas, who says he buys small pumpkins for anyone who comes to visit during this time, and then he sends the kids home with a pumpkin for their house. I think that's really sweet.
Yes, that really, really is. You know, everybody has their traditions. And, you know, when I was a little kid, I'm talking like two years old, maybe 3 years old, my father worked every night. Mm-hmm. So he wasn't around too much, like after 9 o'clock at night.
Right.
But that didn't matter. We were in bed anyway. But he was never really around then. And when we were little kids, Halloween would come. We lived in an apartment in Stamford. And I had an aunt, no longer with us, but she was a lot of fun and she was a funny lady. One year, she showed up at our house by herself. She was dressed in a witch's costume with a mask on, and she came, she had her bag, knocked on the door, knowing that my mother would answer, and she opened up the door. My mother was like, oh, hi, yeah, how are you? Okay. And I was, this is a little weird, but okay, we're here. Here's a piece of candy. Put it in her sack, and she said, okay, you know, bye-bye now, and she went to close the door, and my aunt stopped her from closing the door. And she was like, is there something else? And she wasn't talking. She just went like this. In other words, like she wanted a drink. Oh. Made the hand motion that she wanted a drink. My mother got a little nervous. No, 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 no. Come on. You got to leave now. You got to leave. And it turned out that to be my aunt, you know, but for a split second, everything right. was like, oh my God, what's going on here?
Yeah,
you
know? I don't know if that's an aunt and an uncle thing, Tony, because my Uncle Louis, my mom's brother, he loves Halloween. He tried to get us into Halloween for so many years, and forever, my uncle had this just horrifying mask. He called it the chicken hawk, mm-hmm. and it was a chicken It was a chicken hawk. It was some kind of like crazy, just, I don't know, like a possessed chicken. I don't know, like a zombie chicken almost.
Right.
It was a terrifying mask. My brother and I were horrified by it. And he, one of the days that we went to go to his house near Halloween season, he hid in his closet with the chicken hawk mask on. And my mom knew about this. And we walked in, we're walking around. Uncle Louis, are you here? Are you here? And he comes out, he emerges from his closet with the chicken hawk. We drop down into the fetal position, and I don't even know if we've still gotten back up yet. Like little 8-year-old Nicholas and 6-year-old Melissa, I think they're still stuck in that apartment, freaked out.
See,
the chicken hawk.
That's great.
Holy moly, no, it is not.
That's absolutely great. I love it.